It's an inexhaustible source of stories. I will never run out of Florida stories to tell. Some of them are, you know, crazy, like the one about the woman who pulled an alligator out of her yoga pants when the cops stopped her for smuggling turtles. And some of them are very sad. You know, we did a podcast about the very large homeless population around Disney.
Welcome to the Miami Guides Podcast. My name is Mike Reinhardt, coming to you from Miami Beach. And in each episode, we bring you an inspiring person to help you discover great things in Miami. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Now let the show begin. Well, okay, Greg. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I would love to talk to you and learn more about your story. Yeah, I also read Manatee Insanity. Was a really nice read.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was. I love manatees, and interesting to learn more about them. So, but can you tell us something about yourself? Introduce yourself. How did you got started as an author?
Sure. I'm a native Floridian. So if we get interrupted by someone from the Fish and Wildlife Service coming in to tag me, that's why. I'm we're an endangered species, native Floridians. I was born in Pensacola, went to college in Alabama, graduated just and came back to Florida just as fast as I could because I really wanted to come back. I did not like living in a landlocked state, basically a landlocked state, but worked for the Pensacola News Journal for 5 years, my hometown paper, worked for the Sarasota Herald Tribune for 3 years, and then landed a job at the St. Petersburg Times in St. Petersburg, now the Tampa Bay Times, worked there for 30 years, 20 of it covering environmental issues. And I worked with another reporter named Matt Waite. We did a series of stories about Florida's wetlands that won some national awards, and we turned that into a book called Paving Paradise, and it did really well. And so then the publisher said, "What else have you got?" And I said, "Well, the most outrageous, divisive, crazy issue I cover is manatee protection." And the publisher said, "Great, write a book about that." So that's where Manatee Insanity came from. I've done a total of 6 books. And the big seller is Oh Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country, which 15 publishers rejected as too regional, but one said yes, and it wound up getting rave reviews in the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, and made the New York Times bestseller list for all of a week. So they were able to put that little sticker on the paperback edition. And then I wrote a book called Cattail, which is about saving the Florida panther, which is a story I've been wanting to tell for about 20 years. And I finally needed a good ending, and I finally got a hopeful ending. So I was able to write that one. And then The State You're In, Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife, which just came out recently in paperback. And that's a collection of my stories and columns over the last 30 years. I was laid off by the Times in March 2020, right at the start of the pandemic, but I haven't slowed down a bit. I write a weekly column for the Florida Phoenix about Florida environmental issues. I do a weekly podcast called Welcome to Florida with Chad Scott, and where we try and educate the 900 new people who move to Florida every day about what they've gotten themselves into. And I'm working on book number 7 as we speak.
So it seems like you really love Florida.
Oh yeah.
What do you like most about the state?
It's an inexhaustible source of stories. I will never run out of Florida stories to tell. Some of them are, you know, crazy, like the one about the woman who pulled an alligator out of her yoga pants when the cops stopped her for smuggling turtles. And some of them are very sad. We did a podcast about the very large homeless population around Disney World, which was that's a really good story. And some of them are, sort of ongoing things that we have to deal with. My column today in the Florida Phoenix is about all of the multiple sewage spills after Hurricane Ian and the resulting epidemic, I guess you'd say, of flesh-eating bacteria cases that resulted. And what that says about Florida's sewage system and what we need to do about that. So, you know, some are serious, some are not so. And I like to try and encompass all of it. I always like to tell people, you know, I love everything about the state. I love the award-winning state park system. I love the you know, cotton candy sunsets and the world-class beaches. And I think we have the world's greatest police log items too. So,
So, but yeah, a lot about the wildlife and the environment. That's one of your main interests.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been covering environmental issues. I covered it for the Times for 21 years. And now for 2 years, I've been writing this weekly column for the Florida Phoenix. And a lot of the freelance magazine stories that I write are on those topics as well. You know, I did a big piece for Flamingo magazine about efforts to save the coral reefs off of Miami and things like that. Those kind of stories really appeal to me.
What inspired you to start writing about environmental issues?
Believe it or not, it was a Florida writer, John D. McDonald. I come from a whole family of mystery readers. You know, my grandfather worshipped at the altar of Perry Mason. My mom was a big fan of Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple. And I went through, you know, I progressed from Encyclopedia Brown to Sherlock Holmes to Philip Marlowe and those guys. And then when I was 14, my great aunt cornered me and took a big drag in her Pall Mall and said, "I think you're ready for Travis McGee now," and handed me a copy of, you know, one of John D. McDonald's mysteries. And, you know, I had a sort of a scantily clad woman on the cover, and, you know, I'm a 14-year-old boy. "Yes, ma'am, I think I am ready for that." But I wasn't really prepared for what was inside, which was, you know, unlike those other books I'd read, the crimes in the Travis McGee mysteries took place in Florida and often involved people who were ruining the things that were special about Florida, ruining the environment. And that was a real eye-opener for me. You know, I'd been, you know, hunting and fishing with my dad. I'd gone camping and canoeing with my Boy Scout troop, and I really loved Florida's natural wonders. But it didn't occur to me that somebody was out to, you know, pave over all of that just to make a quick buck. And that became sort of an interest of mine as a result.
And we have so many species, wildlife, sea life. And why write about manatees? What do you like about them?
I call them the endangered species that you can see, the endangered species that's in your backyard. You know, Florida's official state animal, the Florida panther, they are very, very difficult to find. You're really, really fortunate if you see one anywhere except on a license plate or at a hockey game. But manatees show up at people's backyard docks. They show up at, you know, in cold weather, they congregate at power plants. So you can go over there and see them. I call them nature's hippie. They are not predators. They are, very laid back animals. Even the females have whiskers and, they're vegetarians. And they have a very prolific sex drive, and they greet each other with something like a kiss. So, you know, be like a manatee, make peace, make peace, not war.
Yeah. I like how you described them in your book. There's a lot of information about the manatees. What's a good place to find manatees? So you already mentioned some of them, but if we in Miami, what would be a good place to spot them?
You know, I think generally the best places to see manatees are to wait for when it's cool, and then you'll see them in the power plant outfall. One of the most crucial pieces of manatee science actually happened there in Miami. There was an early Everglades National Park biologist named Joe Moore, who his assignment from his boss, the first superintendent of the Everglades National Park, told him, "Some people say the manatees are disappearing. Some people say they're more than ever. Help me to figure out what's right. What's really going on with the manatees?" And this is in, like, you know, the late 1940s, when they were first seeing manatees show up with scars on their backs from outboard motors. Mm-hmm. And so Joe Moore wrote to people all over the state and went through all the documents and records of Everglades National Park and reports from the rangers And he was talking to some old fisherman who said, well, if you really want to see a manatee, the best place to see them is this particular avenue in Miami where there's a power plant outfall. Wait till there's a cold morning, which he said, well, that sounds crazy, but he tried it. He went out there on a very cold, I think it was a December morning, parked his car, walked out on the bridge, looked down, and there are dozens of manatees in the warm water, you know, because manatees are very sensitive to the cold. When the weather turns cold, they need warmth. And so they had, you know, what they really prefer are going to springs, but Miami has no springs to speak of. So they went to the power plant outfall, and that's where he started watching them, and then realized they all look alike. I need to find a way to tell them apart. And he realized that they had different scar patterns on them from being hit by boats. So he used like a mimeograph machine, ran off a template of a manatee outline, and then started marking the scars on the outline. And that's how you could tell one manatee from another. That system is still in play. That system, which he came up with in the early 50s, is still in place today. They still use that system to tell one manatee from the other. It's just now all of it is digitally photographed and available online to the scientists who are studying manatees. But that breakthrough occurred right there in Miami.
And are manatees still endangered? How is the current situation?
In 2017, under the Trump administration, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service declared that manatees were no longer met the definition of endangered, so they were going to downgrade them to threatened. But they said they won't lose any of their protection. Everything will be fine. Everything's great. Future's bright, et cetera. And then 2021 rolls along, and we've got 1,000 dead manatees. Suddenly, there's a massive manatee die-off. So there have been a lot of calls for the Fish and Wildlife Service to reverse its decision and put them back on the endangered list. They have not indicated they're going to do that, but it's a pretty dire situation. You know, they had counted something like 6,000 manatees in the most recent aerial counts, and to lose ultimately what wound up being 1,100 of them all at one fell swoop is just staggering to the population and to their future. So they were endangered. They're not endangered now. They may wind up being declared endangered again, but they are certainly imperiled. I think we can agree on that as a term.
Yeah. How did they die?
Starvation. They died of malnutrition. There had been a series of toxic algae blooms on the East Coast, and specifically in the Indian River Lagoon, which is an important place for manatees to seek out warmth. It's fairly shallow there, and there were lots of seagrasses for them to feed on. Mm-hmm. And the toxic algae blooms killed the seagrass. And so when the manatees sought refuge there from cold weather, they had nothing to eat. And so they started sort of wasting away, you might say. And that's why you wind up with so many that were dying. And even the ones that survived were suffering from malnutrition, which may affect their ability to reproduce in the future. As a result of this emergency, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission got permission from the feds to do feeding, artificial feeding of the manatees. They collected lettuce and took it out to near Cape Canaveral and set up a feeding area where they could put the lettuce in the water and the manatees wouldn't associate it with humans, because you don't want them to get accustomed. They're wild animals. You don't want to get them accustomed to getting their food from humans. So they were able to put it in the water in a way that the manatees wouldn't associate it with them, and that seems to have saved some of them, but it was a pilot project. I'm sure they'll do it again this winter, perhaps expand it even to something even larger. And the one sort of silver lining in this terrible story is that so many people around the world donated money to the project that the state didn't have to spend a dime of tax money buying the lettuce. Well wishers for the manatees actually paid for all of that lettuce.
And I guess a lot of the, this environmental problem has to do with pollution.
Yes.
Miami is growing, Florida is growing, a lot of construction. How bad is the pollution today?
It's bad. And it's a political story as well as an environmental story. We've been having problems with both red tide and blue-green algae, both of them very toxic. And the the governor, when he was running for office, said, when I'm elected, I will do something about that. And he did. He appointed a task force of actual scientists, brilliant people, who sat down and came up with a list of recommendations for things that would fix the problem, would help, you know, at least get us started to cleaning up our waterways, cutting back on these toxic algae blooms that are so damaging. And the legislature basically ignored it, and the governor basically ignored it. They passed this very watered down law called the Clean Waterways Act that it doesn't follow the recommendations basically at all. Everything is just voluntary. Oh, we would like, you know, it's like having a speed limit, but you don't get arrested for speeding. They just suggest you slow down, you know, it's like that. And it's one of the governor's biggest broken promises, quite frankly, that, you know, we are still dealing with that and still dealing with the consequences of all this pollution. Well, they're so iconic that manatees are such, they're so associated with Florida. You know, you see them on license plates. You see schools that have adopted manatees. A lot of schools actually use manatees as their mascot. And Crystal River, where Jacques Cousteau filmed his famous special, Forgotten Mermaids, which also had scenes from Miami in it, by the way, has now become sort of a manatee tourism center. There's actually a statue of a manatee at City Hall. There are manatees on the police badges, although I don't think that really scares the bad guys. And they have an annual manatee festival there. So, you know, they're not just cool animals to look at. They're and environmentally important, but they're economically important too. They're part of our tourism industry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to take better care of them.
Yeah, we did once a podcast with the grandson of Cousteau.
Oh, that's great.
Philippe Cousteau. Yeah.
Yeah. For the show, there was a manatee that had gotten stuck in a Miami drainage pipe. They called it Sewer Sam. And so they had gotten Sewer Sam out of the pipe, but they didn't know what to do with him. And Cousteau found out that if he could get Sewer Sam across the state, he could release it in the Crystal River area. So he paid to have Sewer Sam transferred from Miami, where he'd gotten stuck, over to the Crystal River area. And the release was successful. It made for a very dramatic TV. People all around the world learned about manatees for the first time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them started flocking to Florida to see manatees because they were so intrigued by this TV show.
What inspires you? Well, where do you get your inspiration from and your creativity to write?
You mean other than my monthly mortgage statement? you know, from my kids. These are things that I want them to know about the state where they've grown up in and the state where they were born and grown up in. And so, you know, they say all writers have an ideal reader. And when I was younger, my ideal reader was my aunt, who was very inquisitive and loved to hear me tell her about the things that I was working on. But when my kids were born, I started thinking differently. I started thinking, you know, instead of I need to tell them about these important things that are going on in their state, and they need to know about this stuff. And in fact, they actually make an appearance in Manatee Insanity, and the book is dedicated to them. One Christmas, when we had spent a lot of money on gifts and we didn't have any money left, and then our heater broke and the weather was kind of cold. You know, I was home, the kids were playing video games, and but the house was very cold, and we took turns going in and into the kitchen and hanging out near the stove because that was the one source of warmth. And I thought, you know, there is a free entertainment thing that will get us out of this house, and we can at least sit in the warm car for a while. So I loaded them into the van. We drove an hour over to Apollo Beach, and, you know, enjoying the warmth of the car heater. And when we got to Apollo Beach, the big power plant there, got out there, went to the manatee viewing area, and there were 300 manatees huddled up there for warmth. Wow. And one of my kids actually looked around and said, "Dad, this is cooler than video games." So that's who the book's dedicated to.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that's amazing. Do you have any advice for aspiring writers, emerging writers, to start writing?
I would quote you Harry Cruz's advice. Harry Cruz, the famous author who was also an instructor in writing at the University of Florida, which was put your butt in the chair. Basically, if you want to be a writer, sit down and write. You know, that's how you learn how to do things is by actually doing it. So, and read too. You should read, you know, read good writers in order to learn how to write. I guess that's the other lesson. Okay. You know, read, and I would recommend reading a lot of Florida writers. John D. McDonald, I mentioned. Zora Neale Hurston's another one. Carl Hiaasen. Edwidge Danicant, who lives there in Miami. Those are all brilliant writers who are, you know, living right here in Florida and can teach you a lot.
So Miami Book Fair is coming up soon.
Yes.
What is next for you? You mentioned something about an upcoming book.
Yeah, I'm working on a book about pythons. I've written two books about Florida native species. Now I think it's time to tackle the biggest invasive around. And the stories are just amazing. I tracked down the first Everglades park ranger who found a python in the park. It happened in 1979. He was coming back from a first date. There was not a second date because he insisted on picking up the snake. It was 11 feet, 9 inches long. It was huge. Wow. He insisted on picking up the carcass and putting it in the car. And his date said, "You're not putting that in there with me." And he said, "Well, then I'll come back for you."
It was great talking to you. Where can people find more information about you? Where can they follow you?
I have a website, www.craigpittman.com. I'm on Twitter at Craig Times. I do a weekly podcast, Welcome to Florida. That's on all the common podcast platforms. And I write a weekly column for the Florida Phoenix, which is floridaphoenix.com.
Okay, we'll make sure our audience will follow you, and we will share all these links in the show notes.
Great.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for talking. It was really nice to hear your story, and I can't wait for your upcoming book.
Thanks.
About Python. So, thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Miami Guide podcast as much as we enjoyed creating it. Well, you can find more information about our guest in the show notes. And if you haven't subscribed to our show yet, please take out your phone right now and subscribe to the Miami Guide podcast so that you don't have to miss another show. All of our episodes are also on our website, themiamiguide.com. And I would love to hear your feedback about the episodes. I appreciate if you'd leave me a review on iTunes. Well, we have more episodes coming up. We're brewing with ideas, stories, and content we can't wait to share with you. Well, once again, my name is Mike, and I'm here to inspire you with amazing stories, capturing the vibes of Miami, and help you discover the magic of this city. You can follow us online everywhere as The Miami Guide on Instagram, Facebook, and our website, themiamiguide.com. Thank you so much for listening and see you in the next episode.